Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, April 18th. I'm Lisa Music reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, Humboldt Tech System to I vehicles. City of Fort Bragg, County consider regulations for tiny homes, and FEMA denies assistance for January flood damages. Stay tuned. News on those stories and more coming right up. Humboldt County is adding camera technology to its crime-fighting tools. Daniel Mentz reports.
To better crack a variety of crimes, the Humboldt County Sheriff's Office will use camera technology to eye vehicle license plates. The county's Board of Supervisors was briefed on the Automated License Plate Reader Technology Program at its April 9th meeting. The program will use a camera system from the Flock Safety Company, which says its equipment is capable of photo-recording real-time evidence to track down stolen vehicles and aid in investigations of crimes like abductions. Undersheriff Justin Broad talked about what it is and what it does.
The current reality is limited police resources, right? We talk about this all the time in other board meetings. Crime is on the rise, not on the decline. And trust is needed more than ever with law enforcement and the people they serve. This opportunity, we believe, using this technology multiplies the forces we have, allows us to capture and distribute objective evidence to the right users, and allows engagement with the community to support and grow this program once they see the benefits of it. Flock Safety provides indiscriminate photo evidence from fixed locations. A picture is taken from rear vehicle, capturing license plate information, vehicle description. License data is automatically run through the California Law Enforcement Telecommunications System. This is infrastructure free, reducing time to value and utility costs with full service deployment. 24/7 coverage, capturing objective vehicle data around the clock to multiply our forces.
Broad added that the system is ethically made with no facial recognition or traffic enforcement involved. He said 80 other police departments in the state are using it, including 8 sheriff's offices. County Sheriff Billy Hansel said the system is solar-powered and completely cloud and web-based. The vehicle make, model, and license plate information it gets is shared only with law enforcement agencies. Supervisor Michelle Bushnell said cameras are already everywhere. They just have poorer eyesight.
So in the Southern Humboldt area, every business and home down there, almost every, have cameras. And I know my business has 4 out front, and the sheriff has came, the deputies have came and said, can I look? Because it faces the streets. Oftentimes, just like this photo, you're not able to see the license plate. Even zooming in, my cameras allow you to zoom in. And so I do think that, you know, especially in those rural areas, you already are using cameras that are out there. You're just not capturing the things, the license plates that you need, because those cameras aren't good enough. I know the credit union down there has great cameras and still aren't able to capture the license plates. So, you know, everybody's under surveillance right now. This isn't going to be something new that you're not under surveillance.
Hansel said his office already has 3 cameras installed in the McKinleyville and Greater Eureka areas, and 4 more will be installed on the Highway 101 corridor in northern and southern Humboldt. Although vehicle-mounted cameras are available, Hansel said they're not part of his office's plans. Asked if the systems have caused controversy, Hansel said there's some concern about them, but their use is a matter of trust.
I'm not aware of communities that don't want to move forward with this technology, but I am aware of people that don't trust government and that don't trust this kind of technology in the hands of government, because you have to trust your people with the power to utilize this information as promised and not use this as another surveillance tool, so to speak. And so that is an issue. I know the ACLU has taken up issue with license plate reader technology, but I feel like our policy in place the people that we have in trust of this, the audit tracking system is going to prove that this system is reliable, we are trustworthy, and that we can utilize this to the betterment of our community and to hopefully reduce crime.
The cost of the system, ultimately about $35,000 for 9 cameras, is covered by grants. There was minimal public comment, perhaps partly because the agenda item was moved up from an original afternoon slot. Budgeting for the system has already been approved, so supervisors only voted to accept the report on it. In Eureka for KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
The Humboldt County Office of Emergency Services recently announced that federal assistance for flood-affected individuals and businesses has been denied. This denial comes despite significant damages reported during the January flooding events earlier this year. Here's a snippet from the press release. Federal disaster assistance is crucial to local communities like Humboldt County. When a natural disaster strikes and the damage exceeds the capabilities of the county or the state to respond, the state may ask the federal government to declare a disaster. A federal disaster declaration helps the impacted community qualify for federal aid programs, including funding from the U.S. Department of Homeland Security's Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. One critical disaster assistance program is FEMA's Individual and Household Program, which provides financial and direct services to eligible individuals or households. The threshold for a federal disaster declaration in California is approximately $72 million, or roughly 1,200 homes destroyed or with major damage. The state's threshold is exceedingly high because of the high economic value of the Los Angeles and San Francisco Bay Area regions and the state's tech industry. As a result, small and/or rural communities throughout the state are unable to qualify for federal assistance and are deprived of an equitable opportunity for disaster recovery. Until regulatory changes are made in Washington, D.C., this critical assistance remains out of reach for rural communities like Humboldt County. During the two major storms that followed two devastating earthquakes that left some without homes and many with damages and mounting hurdles to recovery, Humboldt County was again denied FEMA funding. However, neighboring Mendocino County was able to secure individual funding through FEMA for both storm events. To shed some light on this matter, we turn to an interview from 2023 with Travis Kilmer, the Disaster Recovery Field Operations Coordinator in Mendocino County.
So FEMA doesn't like to tell you directly what the threshold is per county. It's not a dollar figure. When they go out to do assessments, FEMA will take a look at a property and they will either classify it as destroyed, major damage, minor damage, or affected. And mostly what FEMA is looking at is they want to see what you have in the categories of destroyed or major damage.
According to Kilmer, FEMA representatives are often unfamiliar with rural living.
For the second storm, I actually took FEMA out one day to Whale Gulch. So it's one of our most remote areas. And they had a tremendous amount of damage, mostly tree damage, winds that had just taken out thousands of trees. And it damaged a lot of private water systems. It didn't damage a lot of houses directly because they've done a really good job out there of getting defensible space around their homes because they know that they're out there. And response time for any outside help is going to take a long time. So they've done a really good job there. And they almost got penalized for it by FEMA because FEMA came out and looked and you just see trees everywhere. Damaged water systems that people rely on. You know, they don't have any municipal utilities out there. It's all things that they provide themselves. And FEMA's looking and going, we don't see any damage here. And so then you have to argue with FEMA. And they rely on a lot of reservists who get called up. They don't work full-time for FEMA. They come from all over the country. And if they're not familiar with how life works in rural areas of the North Coast, they see that and they think, oh, well, that's just trees that are down. That's not damage. And it's like, no. People need water to live. This is how they get their water. This is catastrophic damage for these people. And FEMA doesn't always understand that. So it's kind of frustrating if you are somebody who grew up in this area and you know what it's like if you live off the grid and FEMA, it doesn't click. That's why we had to fight for it the second time. They weren't going to give it to us.
Kilmer's perspective underscores the disparity in how FEMA assesses damages, particularly in rural versus urban settings. Areas with dense population and or higher property values can quickly reach financial thresholds, allocating funds to urban areas, even when some poorer rural areas are more devastated by a particular natural disaster.
In both of these storms, you know, when I was looking at what counties are getting declared for what, I did find it curious because in both storms, I mean, if you look at the maps that FEMA puts out on their website that will show you, you know, okay, these states got individual assistance. Some states got public assistance, which that's mostly for like the counties and various other government agencies for damages. And that one, they base that one on dollar figures. That's like, okay, the county road system had this much damage. And if you hit a certain threshold, then you can get that form of assistance. But for individual assistance, one thing that I noticed both times is if you look at those maps, there's a cluster mostly on the central coast. There was a cluster of counties that all got individual assistance, and they did get impacted pretty badly down there. And in the second storm, you see a lot of that same area and also in the Sierras, but both times north of the Bay Area, the only county that got individual assistance was Mendocino. And I think it's because we pushed really hard and we had to fight for it. I don't know. I would hope that going forward, they kind of learn how to interact with these rural areas more.
Until changes are made at the federal level, residents are on their own. Humboldt County's Office of Emergency Services encourages residents to rely on insurance, stating, quote, "Insuring your home, business, or property is the best way to make sure you will have the necessary financial resources to help you repair, rebuild, or replace whatever is damaged in the event of a natural disaster," end quote. However, California is in a major insurance crisis. With skyrocketing rates, insurance companies dropping clients, or completely pulling out of California altogether, leaving many to wonder how to survive in the current economic climate affecting Californians daily, let alone during a natural disaster. Kilmer's remarks, as well as the outright denial of assistance to Humboldt County during the early 2023 earthquakes and storm events, highlight the need for a reevaluation of FEMA's approach to disaster assistance, particularly in rural areas. As residents of Humboldt County navigate the road to recovery, they face the daunting task of rebuilding without federal support. In housing news, as Humboldt's Planning Commission seeks to regulate tiny houses, so does Mendocino County and the city of Fort Bragg as they consider regulations for tiny homes. KZYX's Sarah Reith brings you the details.
Tiny homes are getting some attention in Mendocino County, with the Board of Supervisors as well as the Fort Bragg City Planning Commission considering their regulations this week. On Tuesday, the Board of Supervisors heard an informational presentation about proposed standards, which will come before the County Planning Commission and then back to the Board for final approval. The County's Planning and Building Services Director, Julia Krog, said she's working to have tiny home regulations for the unincorporated areas adopted in just a few months. And in Fort Bragg on Wednesday, the City Planning Commission heard some modifications to its tiny homes ordinance, which were necessary to bring it in line with state codes. Their recommendations are also scheduled to move on to the City Council for final adoption this summer. Krog told the Board of Supervisors that stick-built tiny homes in the unincorporated areas will be subject to state building codes or Class K standards. The county also adopted relaxed standards for houses that are 400 square feet or less. 400 square feet is the maximum allowable size for a tiny home.
Starting with permanent construction tiny homes, these are permissible today. Someone could come into our office and say they want to build a tiny home, and they would be subject under zoning requirements to the same standards as any other type of residential dwelling, whether it's as a primary residence or as an accessory dwelling unit, and subject to the same development standards such as setbacks, height, you know, standards, parking, etc. Under the building code, we did, when we adopted the 2022 California Residential Code, we adopted Appendix AQ as part of that, which has some relaxed standards for houses that are 400 square feet in area or less. And you can permit a tiny home, either subject to the California building code, or you can also do that as Class K. So today, any person wanting to build a permanent construction tiny home, again, that's not one that's been registered through the Department of Motor Vehicles would be able to do so with just meeting the standard building code or under Appendix AQ and also the zoning code requirements.
Krog added that movable tiny homes will have to comply with DMV rules. Utility connections and design standards will be regulated by the county.
This is really to ensure that you have a structure or a tiny home at the end of this that does not have the appearance like it's an RV. You want it to look like it is built onto the site. So what we had talked about at the last board meeting where we discussed this was skirting around the wheels to hide the axles and the wheels. And then insulation meeting certain standards, which would ensure that this would not apply to something like a recreational vehicle or a travel trailer, that it really is a stick-built home. Again, standards related to wall framing and the type of materials that you utilize. And then one of the other items was ensuring that there was a paved parking pad or another type of installation, whether that be gravel or something that would prevent the movement of the unit. And the direction from the board was to have that alternative surface be permitted based upon a determination by the director, ensuring that it is adequate, compacted, that you're not going to have any issues related to the tiny home rolling off the site. The other aspect was that mechanical equipment be incorporated into the structure, with the exception of solar, which by necessity needs to be on the roof.
The following day in Fort Bragg, the City Planning Commission voted unanimously to recommend amendments to the city's tiny homes ordinance prepared by consultant Marie Jones. The amendments apply both to the city's local coastal program and the Inland Land Use and Development Code. In 2019, Fort Bragg amended the city's housing element to consider mobile homes as second units as long as they look like a house. 3 years later, the city adopted a tiny homes ordinance, allowing up to 3 tiny homes on one parcel, which would place the parcel within the state's definition of a mobile home park. The proposed ordinance includes park model RVs in the tiny home regulations. A park model RV, according to the staff report, looks like a small, narrow home, usually 9 feet wide, that can be towed from one place to another. A tiny home or park model RV could be considered an ADU, or additional dwelling unit. Tiny homes would be allowed with permits in most zoning districts with a single-family home or duplex, but not in the central business district. In the interests of promoting affordable housing, the Planning Commission decided to recommend exempting tiny homes from paying a capacity fee. They also recommended charging a one-time water hookup fee, which could be available to a succession of temporary mobile tiny homes. In a separate but similar item, the Fort Bragg City Planning Commission also recommended that the City Council repeal and replace its mobile home ordinance with a tiny homes communities ordinance. This would allow for small home subdivisions in all residential zoning districts, including those in the coastal zone. If the City Council approves it, this will do away with the current requirement that mobile home parks be situated on a parcel larger than 3 acres. The current proposal recommends a minimum of 1/4 acre for a tiny home community, which could accommodate 5 to 8 units. The items met with support from the public as well as policymakers at the city and county meetings. Amy Wynn of Wynn Coastal Planning and Biology called the supervisors to express enthusiastic support for tiny homes.
We've probably had at least a couple hundred potential property owners and property owners asked to utilize the tiny movable tiny home as a tool for a way to either phase their own residential use of the property or accommodate family members, family support members, workforce housing, etc. So love this concept. Please move forward post haste.
When Krog assured supervisors that she could delegate staff to make sure parking pads for the homes were in compliance, Supervisor Maureen Mulhern envisioned a flood of applicants.
I feel like that would be a happy accident to have so many that it completely bogged down your...
Wouldn't that be wonderful?
I think that... I mean, I would love to see that happen.
For KZYX News, I'm Sarah Wright.
In national news, Senate dismisses impeachment articles against Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas. KPFA's Max Pringle reports.
Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer of New York said the impeachment was a political stunt.
For the sake of the Senate's integrity and to protect impeachment for those rare cases we truly need it, senators should dismiss today's charges.
The first article accused Mayorkas of willful and systemic refusal to comply with immigration laws. The second accused him of breach of trust for saying the border was secure. The The votes to dismiss were along party lines, 51-48 for the first article and 51-49 for the second. Senate Democrats argued that neither article rose to the level of high crimes or misdemeanors and simply amounted to a policy disagreement. Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said the House charges were serious enough to warrant a full trial. The Kentucky Republican said the Democrats simply chose to ignore serious accusations.
It doesn't make any difference whether our friends on the other side thought he should have been impeached or not. He was. And by doing what we just did, we have in effect ignored the directions of the House, which were to have a trial.
But Senate Leader Chuck Schumer said both the articles distorted what impeachment was really intended for in the Constitution.
This is an illegitimate and profane abuse of the U.S. Constitution. The framers were clear. Impeachment should never be used to settle policy disagreements. Legal scholars from across the ideological spectrum have agreed to the same for decades.
Schumer said House Republicans, under the direction of Donald Trump, have rejected a bipartisan bill that would have dealt with the border crisis.
If House Republicans want to have a serious debate on border security, we welcome it. But everyone knows what's happening at the border is terrible and needs fixing. That's not a secret. The president knows it. Secretary Mayorkas knows it. Both parties in Congress know it. That's exactly why we had a bipartisan bill to fix it.
The impeachment trial was the third in just 5 years. Former President Trump was impeached once for allegedly trying to blackmail Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky to dig up dirt on then-candidate Joe Biden in exchange for military aid, and then a second time for Trump's involvement inciting the January 6th Capitol riot. The Republican-controlled Senate acquitted him both times. For KPFA News, I'm Max Pringle.
Joining forces with local organizations, Recycled Youth will host an engaging Earth Day celebration at the Redwood Playhouse in Garberville on Friday, April 19th. The event will highlight the talents of young artists and performers from the region, with proceeds supporting the area's Soul Free Arts and After School initiative. Lauren Schmidt brings you the details.
Recycled Youth and its supporters are hosting an Earth Day celebration and benefit show on Friday, April 19th at the Redwood Playhouse in Garberville. They invite the community to come and support our area's blossoming young artists and performers.
I'm Jessica Rubin, and I am the program director of Recycled Youth, which is a performing arts and expressive arts program that's been in Southern Humboldt for over 25 years.
We work with kids ages 12 to 18 to create performance pieces that are original shows that the students create with the adult mentors that work at the program. And we create musicals. So we do songwriting and playwriting, aerial arts and puppetry and mask work, to create a full-scale play that the kids put on. It's a really awesome way for kids to express themselves and to come together and like do something that's not only creative, but also creates opportunities for connections with kids they might not have met otherwise, because it's open to all students. So we're 12 to 18. So we have like homeschooled kids. We have kids that come all the way from Whale Gulch, kids from the high school and from Leggett School that are involved.
In a rural community, this event supports the only free arts and after-school program available to local children. According to Ruben, it has served as a critical outlet for the youth who participate.
We used to do this program just for 3 months a year, and the people involved started talking about how when they don't have Recycled Youth, like they don't feel connected to their friends as much, they don't get to see each other as often, spend a lot of time isolated, and that being there, a lot of times the kids will say things that are just so heartwarming. Like they're like, I finally found my people, you know, things along the lines of just like finding community, like finding the folks that you feel connected to and that you feel you can be yourself with. And so that really inspired us to open the program year round so that kids have a place to go that they feel seen and heard and safe, and that they can have a a fun time at while also like expressing themselves.
To continue offering this vital service to our area's youth, community funding is essential.
Yeah, so Recycled Youth is free to the participants. Some parents do donate to have their kids be a part of it, but a lot of parents aren't able to do so. And so we apply for grants, and when grant funding is available, we often get some grant funding, but mostly we are running on community donations and support. So in order to keep going and keep this program open for our youth and our small community, we need the community's help to come together and support the kids by coming to our benefit, which we're having Friday, April 19th at the Redwood Playhouse.
Recycled Youth will join forces with the Feet First Dance Troupe and other performers for an Earth Day celebration at the Redwood Playhouse.
You know, Recycled Youth has always been a way for the youth in our community to communicate their ideas and their feelings to the adults out there. And so we wanted to create an event where there was more community engagement this time. You know, there'll be performances, but we also have some opportunities for people to engage with us at Recycled Youth and with, you know, all of us who are there at this event. And so we're going to have a plant sale starting at 5:30. So people can come to that and listen to some music outside and hang out with friends and buy concessions and just like have a nice social time looking at all the beautiful plants. And then we're going to come inside and Florina Niglia is going to run a mindful movement for like the whole audience and for all the performers together. And then we'll have performances with the kids from Recycled Youth will perform. The little girls in the aerial silks class will come perform their silks they've been working on. Some of Jesse Lee Langston's students are going to perform music. Feet First Dancers is performing. And we also have the Blueberry Hill Boogie Band will be performing. And they're also bringing puppets from this puppet show that they've been working on to bring to the youth in Humboldt. So it's going to be a really cool event. And then we're finishing off with a spiral dance with the whole audience and all the performers together.
The plant sale will start at 5:30, followed by festivities and performances beginning at 7. All proceeds from the benefit will go to Recycled Youth and other local environmental organizations.
Hoping to see you there if you're able to come and to get to spend this fun evening together. And if not, I hope to see you at our show in June 14th, 15th, and 16th. We are performing a full-length show that the kids are writing, and that has a lot to do about, you know, reconnection to the earth, exploitation of resources, privilege, and, you know, a lot of like really important themes that are affecting all of us right now. So we're really excited to be able to offer that, and this benefit will help us to make that happen.
You can learn more about the Earth Day celebration and benefit for Recycled Youth by following the Redwood Playhouse on social media. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Lauren Schmidt.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. And thanks to our reporters Lauren Schmidt, Sarah Reith, Daniel Mintz, and Max Pringle. KMUD News is online. You can find us on KMUD.org, SoundCloud, Instagram, and Facebook. That's where you can see stories, links, and videos. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call to 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Reporting from the KMUD studio in Redway, I'm Lisa Music.